listening to the Art of Play podcast. Here we are talking about the research of fun, talking to people who are contagiously playful, and inviting you to find creative ways to stay curious and developing your best human self. Happy Friday. Today we are on episode 47 of the podcast. We are also right in the throes of celebrating our 1 year anniversary that ends on the 21st of February for the podcast to be out in the world. And we're doing a giveaway right now on social media. You can have two entries into the giveaway, which, by the way, gets you an Amazon $100 gift card leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. That's two entries into the giveaway. Or you can share on any social media platform. You just have to tag me. So make sure that you are getting those entries in, because the giveaway closes on Sunday, February 21st. But today we are talking about expectations, because of course for the entire month of February we are talking about expectations. And I have a fabulous interview for you today. We have Jenna Rammel, who's a Utah business owner, empowerment leader, and a fellow empathetic human. So you may recognize her as one of the former writers of the blog Small Fry, and she is now on Instagram as Jenna's Kitchen. Jenna has a lovely heart and is a very heartfelt person. She's open about her work to becoming wholehearted, and she really shows up and digs for that connection on social media. I have a small side note about this interview today, because Jenna and I needed to Zoom for the interview. I, of course, had technical issues on my side, which caused some delays in recording. So the delays of feedback of responses were off and caused most of what we talked about to actually not be recorded. Because of this, the interview will sound choppy in sections, and please know that I did my best to keep the content smooth and salvage what I could, because Jenna gave some amazing things to talk about, but there will be some raspy parts. So just give us some grace there. Jenna was very gracious, very helpful, and a wonderful conversationalist. So I will get right into it for you. We have Jenna Rammel here with us. And if you don't know Jenna, she is one of the big open hearts on social media. She's sort of led the charge of being a business owner and a wife and a mother in a very open way. You sort of have this way of gathering. You diversify your gathering sort of on the fly. You're always gathering people around you and saying you're very good at making people feel welcome at the table and open to sharing big things or hurtful things or happy things, and being willing to stand by and celebrate with people. So why don't you take some time and explain what you do and how you came to be who you are today?
Well, I'm going to listen to that description of myself every morning before I wake up, because I will feel a lot better about myself when the feet hit the ground. Thank you for all that kindness. Wow, that is a beautiful way to be seen. Thank you so much. That I can see about you that you are all those things too, because to be able to see those gifts in someone else is really, really special. So thank you for that. Yes, my name is Jenna. I am a mom of four kids. I don't even know how old they are anymore, like 11 to 2, just all the ages. They keep changing ages and I can't keep up with it. So 11 to 2 years old, and I've been married to my husband Andrew for 15 years. And yes, I think I started my first children's blog. My second son was 1, and so that is 8 years ago, but I was blogging and Instagramming and graphic designing for a few years before that. So I feel like, yeah, it's been an over a decade watching the internet change and evolve and become something, you know, the Kelv filter on Instagram, and it was like this orange sepia nonsense, to now this like really beautiful curation. And I feel like now we're kind of navigating towards this desire and feeling for vulnerability and reality, and looking to find in others what we see in ourselves. And so yeah, I through that process have really, I've always loved to write. I turned in essays as a child to, like, you know, different festivals and things like that. And I was, you know, in a school newspaper and things like that. But I always loved to write, and I always had a dream of writing a book. And so I think these excerpts from my life that I share, a journal of sorts, are, you know, my book. And so I try to share my life with other people in a real and raw way, that says, I see you and I'm here too. And we can have happiness and joy and success. And we can also have sorrow and pain and suffering and grief, and they can live together every single day. And it's okay. We don't have to pick one or the other all the time. And so, from that, I started sharing, kind of more of like holistic health and essential oils. And that's a really big passion of mine. And really everything I do falls under the umbrella of empowering women. And from this, we developed a serum called Skin Bay, which is kind of our unicorn bottle potion of skin miracle. And it has empowered women to heal their child's molluscum and eczema and their own skin, which then gives them confidence. So it's so funny because sometimes I'll look at my business and I'm like, this is the biggest like hodgepodge of all time, but it really does have a common theme. And that theme is to empower women and to give them tools at home, emotionally, physically, mentally, to have a more elevated life and to feel better. And so that is our passion. And then I think the largest part of my work, the thing that I am most passionate about, is raising money and raising awareness for the voices that don't have that in their life. And we have, through our community, raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they have blessed me with the gift of being the hands by which I can deliver such goodness to people. And I know you probably feel this way too with the Oliver Fund. It is such a sacred gift to be entrusted with money to give to others. And so we have helped people, from children refugees to women refugees. Refugees are a big passion of mine, having spent 10 years of my own life in the Middle East. So I have a very strong desire to help them, especially as they navigate our country and kind of acclimate mm-hmm. here. And so we've helped women, we've helped children. Foster care is another big thing I advocate for, having been in foster care myself. And so, yeah, I think, I mean, the list is long of people that we've been able to support and help and reach. But it is definitely the best part of my job.
Yeah. Well, and I say that I think that you are very good at being open about sharing your experiences and how that relates you. I think it's a great example of it's hard to champion every cause and every need. Yeah. And I think you're really good at saying, these causes I know I can help because I can relate, or these causes I know that if we all work together, we can make a difference and we can raise those $5 and $10 donations and actually have that add up to be a significant help.
Okay. At this point, our communication was really garbled. So we had this really great discussion about connection, and I'm just going to just kind of jump right to Jenna's response about connection and how she kind of has developed her connection over time.
You know, how I became this way and feeling like connection and roots and is, you know, a myriad of things. Of course, like you said, I was placed for adoption and lived in foster care for 6 months, and then went to my adopted family, who I love so much, and they are the best. And so I think that initial shock of disconnection always had me craving for familiarity and connection. Like I always say, I love when I run into someone at the grocery store, or I love when I know my gas station attendee, or I love when I know the name of the girl at the grocery store. Like that is the thing for me. Like that stuff makes my heart like soar. Like that's why like Diane Keaton in a holiday movie, like she is my like, she is my jam. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I, kids coming home, that's how I've decorated my house, is like imagining bringing home a girlfriend to this like idyllic, you know, classic totally. Home. Like that is who, you know, all those things about Jenna, me, are just like so funny because it's all connection. It's all root. It's all familiarity. It's all of that. And then we moved a lot growing up. We moved in the Middle East. We moved all around the world. My dad had a really awesome experience and a career. And those were cool life experiences. And those fed into me as well, seeing other people's needs, seeing poverty so yeah. real, so evident, you know, people begging and living on the streets. Like that was something familiar to me. That was what I saw every day when I went to the market with my mom, and orphanages, you know, things that people a lot in America don't see when they're living in the suburbs. Like that.
Well, it's easy to, like, even if you see pictures, it's not like being there and seeing the humanness in those situations.
Yeah. Right. And so I think just, you know, many things made up for a life of, in some ways, torture. I mean, I know that you are an empath as well. I can tell that. And it is torture really to feel like, you know, when you're speaking earlier of like you're good at picking the causes that you resonate with. I feel like I am, but you know, I get hundreds of messages about GoFundMes, and those stories are all sad. They're all sad. And those people and those humans all deserve money raised for them. And I can't do it all. And so I have to sit with the good I am doing. And, you know, I was talking to my mom about that yesterday. She's like, you have to take pause and notice the goodness you are doing, because, you know, we raised all this money for those being evicted, and this kind of shift in laws with the pandemic happening, where these people are no longer protected by the government and no longer subsidized. So these humans like you and me that have lost jobs or had to pivot or change are going to lose their homes. And I, you know, we raised, I don't know, I think we're at like $75,000. I mean, it's awesome. Like it's a lot of money. We're going to be able to do a ton of good with it. And then my mom comes over and she's like, Dad was telling me today that 40% of Native, you know, Americans on reservations, 40% do not have power and water. And I'm just like, yeah. You know, and I instantly crumble. And it's like all this stuff that I am doing is like, oh my goodness, I have so much more work to do. And I love that fire about me. And I love that. I love that I want to continue to champion people, but I have to temper myself and really sit back and appreciate and acknowledge and respect the good that I can do and have done and will continue to do, and trust that I will continue to do the work that I need to do. And so, and that's something that I really feel passionate about sharing with my community, is we've done this thing in the past where we share Amazon teacher lists. I don't know if you've seen that we've done, but it's been so amazing. And teachers have these wish lists, and my mom's a school teacher again, right? So there's always these connecting pieces for me where I care about that cause, and I know someone, or I understand the deficit we have in education funding. And
the life factor
and
of
people,
teachers taking part of their salary in order to get essentials for their classroom. I mean, there's this offset that most people don't, that you don't see, because your kid just shows up and there is paper and crayons and there, you know, there's just
exactly. Or, you know, I get the group text where the moms are annoyed, like, oh, I just spent $150 on school supplies. And I'm just like, oh, I can't hear you. Like, I feel like people speak from what they understand. And so teaching my audience, I have to look at that as service as well, right? Okay. Just these little things of like, oh, people are getting evicted, or people, you know, teachers are taking their $28,000 salary for the entire year and spending money on school supplies. Wow, I didn't know that. And so I feel like knowledge is also part of the service, right? And we do this teacher listing, and I'll inevitably get a few DMs that say, my sister's a teacher and I want to really help her. And my audience isn't big. Can you share her list? And I go over to their audience and they have 400 followers. And I'm like, this is 400 people that if they donated $1, which they won't, they will donate $10 or $20 or whatever. They buy one thing, two things. Her whole list would be filled. And so that's a passion of mine too, is empowering people following, no following, money, no money, how impactful your influence can be. And that, I hope, creates a ripple effect.
Well, and I think the more you share it, especially in that way, it is empowering, because people, we've shifted to thinking that more of our external validation, people even can feel self-love and be self-empowered, but they feel like that is just for them, that nobody else benefits from them having self-love and having that self-knowledge. And what it really comes down to is there are people in the wings ready and waiting to help you. And whether that's 10 people that follow you or 100,000 people that follow you, it doesn't, the distinction between the two doesn't matter, because you're reaching somebody. You're reaching multiple people, and your life has influence all by itself. So you might as well make it for, if you are drawn to good, then do good and, you know, and try and do your best. I think you empowering women in that way to say, look, I mean, it doesn't matter if you just have friends and family as your followers, they're still your people. Those are your people. And asking, you know, for help is something we've lost in our humanness of saying, we can do this together, especially if it's not for me. Like, you know, this person I'm highlighting, let's give their students, you know, a good year or a good start to the year, or let's give this person, you know, a Christmas they weren't expecting and that would really change their life course for this year. Because if we don't know the need, we don't know to fill it. So.
Well, and also, you know, that goes back to, you know, last year we did a lot of work with the United Way and their Christmas lists. It was in conjunction with Utah Care Foster Care System. Anyway, I did a tour of the facility and I look up and there are just, I don't know if you remember the story that I posted, but like just a massive amount of green beans. I mean, you've never seen it in your life. Just like thousands and thousands of cans of green beans. And I looked up and I said, what's that? And he goes, you know, the director of the United Way is like, that's green beans. He said, you know, it's interesting because people don't trust us with their money. They feel best about giving something. They want to involve their kids. And so they do food drives. So what does everyone get rid of from their pantry? The stuff they're not eating. And, you know, in this particular United Way, the majority of who they're serving are Hispanic, and their diet doesn't consist of green beans. Like, this isn't helpful for them. And so now the United Way has to pay for storage of the green beans, find a way to distribute the green beans. And also they can get food cheaper than we can, because they buy, you know, the people are giving them deals and distributors and so it, you know, these things we don't even think about, like knowing specific needs. Like, don't buy the $5 lotion for your teacher. You know, ask her, what do you need? What do you need? Do you need a cup of coffee? Do you want a paper towel in your classroom? You know, there's so, I think getting to know people's needs is such an important integral part of this, of service that gets lost. We want to do what feels best for us, but if we're really serving, we're doing what's best for the person we're serving. And it looks different for so many people. And so I think that's really important. That's why I love the Amazon wish list, is it just like really gets to the heart of, this is what I need. Instead of thinking I'm going to bring 900 boxes of crayons or whatever. And all things are done and good are good. I just think I've learned a lot about how we can ask questions and get the right answers of what people really need, right? Like with the Oliver Fund, you know, it's like you could send hundreds of dolls that you thought was really helpful, but they use them for 20 minutes. And so in that service, you've learned like, hey, how can we better specifically help them? And have this money go farther, honestly. In the end, like this money gets to go farther because it's specific to the needs of the people.
Yeah.
So I love that, you're doing
and
that.
I just think you just bring up a really good point. And it comes back, I think, to the topic you were talking about, belonging, right? The closer we are to people, the more we see them. And we also feel that connection human to human. And I think the connection with people is something that social media has exacerbated, in that if you focus on the wrong things, you are bound to feel disconnected and less than and less liked and all of those things. But if you focus your intention on the connection side of social media, it will serve its purpose very well. Because you can find connection. You can connect with people all over the world. You can connect with, you know, different walks of life, and you can see different points of view without having to, you know, have a pity party that you don't have money to travel and you can't go to these places. Any of those things can be overcome if your focus is on connection through social media. So I think the highlight of that is helping that need, I mean, that innate need in all of us humans to belong and to connect and to have that tied us through.
So here again, you're going to miss out on a really great discussion about what social media can bring to connection. But I'm going to just jump you into the last part of that discussion about where we talked about the connectivity of social media and how if we control it, it doesn't control that rating system or the connectivity that we may feel we're missing out on. It can be a benefit to connection.
And so through that progression, have you seen connection change and be different, or are the elements of connection on the internet the same over time?
That's a really interesting question. And I love what you said about the effort and the family and the cousins. You know, I sometimes feel like I'm the only planner and the executor in my family, and trying to get the kids together. And my husband's that way too. Like, he just loves to get the cousins together, and it can be met with resistance. Or last summer I organized family pictures and I felt everyone's freaking eyes in my brain, you know, like hating me. And I just, you know, that maybe was a little bit made up in my mind too, but you know, it's hard to do that groundwork. And so thank you for sharing that with me, because I'm just thinking about Christmas and how I wanted to get everyone together and how it's just been met with so much resistance. And I'm like, fine, I hate you guys, I'm giving up, you know, but you just have to keep going and keep connecting, because that's what we have left, right? You know, at the end of the day, and is connection. And so, you know, I think there's been a lot of changes with regards to family and friends. I felt for many years that they felt connected to me because I was on the internet and I didn't feel seen in person a lot. I felt like people, you know, yesterday I posted our sweet babysitter who's here with my 2-year-old right now. She had done this sweet little tribute for my kids and me and on her stories. And it just brought me to tears, because I think often people think she has enough love, she has enough popularity, she has enough friends, she has enough money, she has enough of this or that, or whatever it is they deem worthy in their minds. She doesn't need my encouragement, my texts, my words. And I can't tell you how many times someone has like showed up for me in my life and I've been really struggling. And, you know, social media is this mask, even as real as I am. I know, like, there are many things I don't open up about.
Well, you're a human. You can only share so much.
Yeah. You know, like, I'm not really talking to Andrew today. I'm really annoyed at him. That's my husband. You know, it's like, that's the reality of what's happening for me today. He's really bugged me and I don't want to talk to him. And it's like, there's a respect level there where it's like, I'm not always going to tell you every downer I'm having, you know, right now. And so I think I've watched that change, especially this year. I've watched as people have really seen that it makes a difference to show up for people in person in any way they can that feels safe for them. You know, whether that's dropping something off or sending a text or sending it, you know, whatever. Right. So I have watched that change, but I think there were many years where I felt like social media gave the actual people in my life a false sense of connection with me. Like, I know what she's doing. I know what she ate. I know where her kids are. I know they're healthy. Totally. I know Jude's doing this and I know Quinn's doing that. So I'm not really asking any questions. And I think now I'm noticing kind of like that changing and shifting as like my circle has gotten smaller and they don't know everything just based on following Jenna's Kitchen. But as far as connections, you know, with my audience, I feel like it's better than ever. I feel like it shifts, it changes. It can feel like the metrics of Instagram show me that less people care, but it really is that less people see it and more people care. Yes. In the sense that those that have been with me all this time, like, you know, I love that line in Greatest Showman when he says, you don't need everyone to love you, just a few good people. Yeah. And that to me is a line that I love to live by, because especially on the internet where you are measured and gauged and calculated in such specific ways that it can make you feel like I'm liked or I'm not liked. I'm popular or I'm not popular. I'm important or I'm not important. And I think I know that that gets in the way of our connection a lot with people.
Yeah. Well, and that's really interesting because we actually canceled Netflix at the beginning of the year, which is probably like the worst 2020 decision ever, but we stuck by it until a friend of mine was like, hey, you've got to watch The Social Dilemma. So got on bottom up, yeah. Watched The Social Dilemma. And then for whatever reason, it's kind of been put in front of me. We think of computers wired like a brain. And so we think the computer thinks like our brain does, but the computer can only think the way we have told it the one way of thinking. We think we've taught it to think like us. And in no way is it actually a human experience to think like a computer. There are ways that the algorithms in social media especially have to weigh engagement and views and things like that because that's how they've been taught. They cannot do it any other way. But that doesn't actually have any basis for value of us as humans because it can't grade us. I worry a little bit for our kids because they've grown up in a world where that seems so real to them because I don't think their brains, because I think they've just grown, they have never known a world without it. So how do you combat that with your kids? How do you bring that into your kids' life and help them realize there's reality and then there's an altered sense of reality on social media? Or do they even, I bet they don't have social media, but how do you sort of help guide them through that transition and connection?
I feel like they definitely don't have social media. Like as far as that, do yours yet?
So my 14-year-old has a few different methods, but I always know the passwords. It's a very open, it's only with friends. We kind of like set really strict boundaries around a box.
Yeah. But we don't have anything yet. I feel like I'm really scared to even open that. We just got them the Gabs. Yeah. My 11-year-old and my 9-year-old just got the Gab wireless. And I feel good about that because I feel like, you know, this in August, we took away the PlayStation and just because it kind of probably for the same reason you took away Netflix, it would just, got to be too much. It got to be very contentious. It just wasn't good for our family. And I, you know, my son flipped out, my second son flipped out. And after his fit was over, I was like, oh, he said, that's how I talk to my friends.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. Yes. That would feel very stressful and like, very like I took away that connection piece yeah. for you. So how can we provide that connection piece for you still? And I said, I can reach out to their moms. We can create play dates. I got him the Gab wireless, you know, I'm trying to find different ways for him to feel connection. And we kind of have this old school neighborhood. Obviously we were really shut down for most of the year, but I feel like now everyone's kind of playing together again because they're in school. Yeah. So, but we kind of have a utopia of a neighborhood where they're outside playing, they're with each other. And it's so great. But anyway, I have been trying to encourage that connection in that way as much as I can, because I feel like it's really important to them. But I think that I'm so new to it. I don't know yet. I'm really hesitant to give them anything, if I'm being really honest. I don't really care if they feel uncool right. for it. Like I kind of am like, that's fine. That's fine. I just feel like it's taking away people's happiness. And so I don't know how to navigate that yet.
Well, and two, I think, so one of the rules we've established with social media here is if you don't know them for real in person, you cannot, like, there's no engagement on social media. And then, but I feel like what this year had me lose a little bit in that is that was our kids' only connection to other people was through technology. And then as things loosened up a little bit, you know, it'd be like, we had like my little girl did a cookie exchange with her friends and they'd go show up on each other's porches and visit for 15 or 20 minutes. They come out of those person to person experiences much more fulfilled than they ever did chatting on the PlayStation with their friends or playing a video game at the same time or even FaceTiming. It's not the same type of connection. And I think for my kids, I've learned that if you can choose to be with the human, choose to be with the human over the human through the screen.
Right. Right. And this year it's been really hard, right? Like I think we've all had to navigate way more screen time than we would have liked, way more time on phones than we would have liked, because we want to be connected to our people too. And so I'm trying to find that balance of like, yes, of course you want to be connected to your people too. Yeah. I get it.
So I think I think everybody finds their own thresholds. And I'm hoping is like 2020, we go into 2020, we start realizing I miss my people, like my in-person people. And we start fostering that in-person relationship even further, because while social media is it's a really great, you know, tap on people. Like I can see right. how their kids are doing. I can see that they went on family vacation. I can see, you know, or I can see the hurt that they got divorced, or I can see some of those things that give me a little bit of insight, like, oh,
yeah, bring up awareness.
It brings good awareness.
Yeah.
But it does not replace at all the personal touch. And so I love that you would point out that seeing on a screen isn't the same as seeing eye to eye, you know, physically in person. So I love that. Okay. Now, one last thing, because I've kept you for way too long since I had technology.
You're fine. No, you're great.
I wanted just every episode I try and end with the same question of if you had one message that everyone who heard it would take it to heart, what would that be?
I love that question. I'm just thinking about that. I feel like if everyone knew how important, how valued, how special, how wonderfully made they are, that they would have the power and the capacity to make the difference in their life and the lives of other people. And if they knew what they were capable of, our world would change, because it's our limitations, it's our pride, it's our ego, it's our scarcity that creates the tension and the negative vibration that we all feel, especially on this planet. And so I think if we really understood what we were capable of and what I think would help us see it in other people, and we would make the changes that we need to have a better, joyful world.
I love that. I absolutely love that. That is a great message for 2021. So
I'm hopeful. I see the difference. I see the difference. It's going to bless us, right? It totally has to.
Yeah.
It has to. There's no other way.
I agree.
There's no other way. We have to come out of this.
Yes. Agreed. Okay. Well, thank you so much for dealing with my technology issues.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Your message is so great, and you're so good at spreading your light in the world. So thank you from me personally to you personally. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. And if we can ever help with all of our fun, let's do something together, and let's make a difference. That would
sounds
be awesome.
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Well, I just want to thank Jenna for her time on here and for being willing to be interviewed under such circumstances. I think her experience in the world of social media, as well as just her experience as a human being, lends itself to telling us about connection and empowering each other and really showing up to be our best selves. And I don't know, I think she just has a really great perspective on the evolution that it's taken, and the tactics that worked initially still work. And if you're looking for connection, empowerment, you can still find it in social media, and you can temper your expectations to actually being useful in your own life. So Jenna has started her own podcast, and it's called Dear Jenna Podcast with Jenna Rammel. And she's just talking about, she has quick episodes. It's just talking about just questions that she gets all the time about being adopted, about oils. She has a really good perspective on things. If you're interested, check it out. It's on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can find podcasts. But I wanted to point out three quick things that she sort of hit on for expectations. And she had like an empowerment expectation that she was talking about for herself. She set herself up to empower others. So she goes forward kind of with that mission in mind of empowering and leading others to better things. And then the expectations of how you're using your influence. If you're thinking that you don't actually influence other people, that's a selfish way of thinking that you don't have any input in life. And then she talks about expectations and connections, and the way that we expect to connect sometimes is not what people need, especially when you're posting a lot on social media and you get an overview of what somebody's life may look like. You make an assumption, or you expect them to act in a certain way that's simply not authentically them, or you're expecting that they will act in a certain way because of what you've seen on social media. So really, it's trying to connect in the best of ways to that person. So thank you so much for listening today. Thank you, Jenna, for your time and your interview. And again, check out our giveaway for this weekend. Happy 1-year anniversary for us on Sunday. And thank you so much for putting us in the top 10% of podcasts. That's an honor for me to know that those listening ears have done that for us. So thank you so much. And here's to leaving you to your weekend, hopefully a little more playful. And I
hope you take the chance to do something fun for you this weekend, even if it takes 5 minutes.